Capital 263. Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawande Henry Beatty. And welcome to the best political podcast in the country.
Aren't we the only one? We're still the only one, right?
Yeah, until someone makes a bond note version of us. I think we're still the only OGs and the only original one.
That would be interesting.
As you can obviously guess, we're talking about bond notes today.
Yeah, today's topic is bond notes. They're out. They are circulating currency, surrogate currency, monopoly money, export incentive. We're not sure which is which, but we did try to get some economists on the show.
And none of them would stake their reputation to defend them or offer an opinion, except those that write under pseudonyms.
But we did find one person who is quite knowledgeable on bond notes, and he is here to talk about them. His name is Chris Chenga. Chris, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do, what you're about.
And why are you asking for money right now?
And why you're
qualified? No, he was just asking for cash.
I think he wants a bond note, you know?
No, even an American note, preferably an American dollar.
No American notes on me right now.
My name is Chris Chenga, by the way. I am not a surrogate person. I am myself. Thank you guys for having me on Politics and Beyond, the number one politics and general talk podcast in Zimbabwe.
Tell us about yourself, Chris. What do you do? Why are you qualified to speak about bond notes?
Firstly, I'm a social commentator who delves sometimes into economic matters. Why am I qualified to talk on bond notes? Is as a citizen with a vested interest in a sustainable monetary system, who's actually trying to accumulate savings, trying to regularly have friendly relations with my bank, I have a vested interest in speaking on bond notes. In terms of why am I the perfect person to speak about it, I don't know. But I do think that if we're to speak seriously, though, I don't think a lot of discourse in Zimbabwe is conducted quite thoroughly as it should. So, for instance, there are a lot of misconceptions and incomplete conclusions about bond notes. Now, all it takes is a little bit of research. Who am I? My background is I'm a researcher. I like to speak from a position of research and factual grounds. Why is that important right now in Zimbabwe? Because a lot of conversations are not spoken from factual grounds. They're spoken from politicized angles. They're spoken from a lot of social sentiment than actually what it is. Hence, as an instrument on the market, I do not think we've actually had fair representation and explanation of what bond notes actually are.
All right. That's great. And thanks for that. You're speaking from a position of research. I am speaking from my own perspective, my own position. Certainly not an economist, certainly not an expert on bond notes. So I think some of the views that our listeners and yourself should get ready for are maybe the social impact and the predominant, chat and chit-chat on the tweets and on the streets. But like always, you know, we speak for ourselves and we're just trying to keep everyone as informed as possible.
Indeed, myself as well, I am no expert on bond notes. The last economics class I took was in A-level, which was quite a while ago. So, I mean, I can tell you about supply and demand, but about this monetary instrument that we have now, it would be a bit of a challenge. And as Henry said, do represent ourselves. We encourage everyone to share their opinions because it's part of the conversation and it hopefully will help us develop a better nation once we have people talking and once we have people engaging. So that is what we intend to do here, just spark the debate.
Yeah, so as you've noticed, I've got Chris 1 and Chris 1 as well. You guys are 1-1. Sorry. Enough of the bond note puns. But yeah, Chris, actually, what is a bond note? And why is it necessary?
A bond note is necessary. A bond note is necessary because what you have in your economy right now is something called a liquidity crisis. In other words, there's not enough cash to go around to satisfy the necessary amount of transactions that people want to actually be engaged in. So it was an instrument which was kind of put in place, theoretically, to actually ease that liquidity crunch by putting more liquidity into the market.
So why are they restricting it to $150 or 150 bonds a week? If you're trying to ease liquidity, you think that you would want as many bonds, as many on the street as possible. Why can I only go and only get $50 a day for 3 days of the week? How does that ease liquidity?
Consider it as medication. If you've got a cold, you want flu meds, but you're not going to go overdose on flu meds. So especially if you're talking about money, you can't necessarily just push out. So for instance, there's a $2 bond note and a $5 bond note, but you haven't seen the five yet, right? You've got to let the market first get used to the new currency. And secondly, if you're going to have two currencies which are predominant, we're a multi-currency, but two currencies which are predominant, which are bond notes and US dollar notes, what you don't want to do is introduce a currency and flood the new currency on the market and actually then have people wonder that, okay, where's the US dollar, which was the predominant, going?
Oh,
there's risk to that.
So poison than medication, you're just doing it slowly.
It's medication put at the right dosage.
So the bond note is a currency?
Yes.
I mean, there's been...
It is a currency. The bond note is a currency.
Okay. So why has there been discussion that it is not a currency, or a surrogate currency, or it's
misguided discussion?
So why is the RBZ saying it's an export incentive? Why aren't they saying it's currency?
They've said it's a currency multiple times.
I'm looking at the press statement here, and it's described as an export incentive. The 28th of November.
The two are not mutually exclusive. You can have a currency that actually functions.
Yeah, my question is, why aren't they describing it as a currency if it is going to be currency?
In the press statement.
They've said bond notes,
and I quote, a small denomination to fund export incentives up to 5%, which will be paid to exporters. At no point in the whole press statement does it say that they're releasing a currency into the economy.
You actually just did read it. When it's a domination of what? Currency. Your first statement.
It doesn't say currency. I'm asking, why are they shying away? It's not assumed. Why are they shying away from the use of this word currency? Because if it was assumed, they would have said it. They're trying to avoid the necessary panic that saying they're introducing a new currency into the economy would cause.
Why would it cause?
Because then
panic?
People would assume that it's a Zim dollar, and once people have the impression that it's a Zim dollar, the idea would be we're reverting back to 2008 when the Zim dollar was last in circulation.
So I guess then what you guys are emphasizing is we've got to differentiate the bond notes from a Zimbabwean dollar note.
On the 10th of November 2016, frequently asked questions about bond notes. What are bond notes? Are they not currency? Bond notes are financial instruments guaranteed by an international financial organization. Not at one point does it say they're currency.
Can you actually read that statement again? It avoids saying
bond notes are currency. Why all the euphemisms? If it's a horse, it's a horse. If it's a dog, it's a dog. Don't tell me it's a mode of transportation, because yes, a horse may also be a mode of transportation, but a car is as well. So why all the euphemism around calling bonds currency?
Can I revert to you with a question?
Yes, certainly.
Now, assuming that people have horror memories of a Zim dollar, would you not agree that it would be irresponsible of the central bank to push using terminology that actually gives that recurrence of Zim dollar, Zim dollar, Zim dollar? Would that not be irresponsible?
What would be irresponsible is introducing a pseudo-currency under a different name, which is what they've done.
Explain why it's a pseudo-currency.
Because you're not calling it a currency, but you just told me it is a currency. So by that definition, it's a pseudo-currency, because they refuse to define it as such. But anyway, I think let's not get bogged down.
Look, at the end of the day, I understand what Chris's argument is that people do have genuine fears of the Zim dollar.
And the governor's reaffirmed that multiple times.
And once people get the perception or believe that this is an actual Zim dollar, which now it is a currency, so it is technically, then the the willingness, the buy-in to use it.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Will not be there.
You're assuming that by the nomenclature of saying a currency, all currencies are the same. So in other words, you're assuming that by me saying the bond note is a currency, it actually makes it generically the same as a Zimbabwean dollar note.
No, not necessarily. Like I said, I'm not an economist. I'm saying currencies operate in a certain way.
In various ways, right?
In various ways. And one of the definitive characters, in my limited understanding, admittedly, of a currency is that it can be openly traded on international markets. You can take it across the borders. Secondly, it would naturally have an exchange rate to other currencies. The fact that you're pegging this pseudo currency, I'm not going to, on the US dollars, makes it either A, it's not a currency, or in if it is a currency,
probably
then call it what it is
40,
and let it
probably more than
float.
40 currencies in the world are actually pegged to other currencies,
like the Chinese.
Yes.
So
let's beat the issue real quick. What makes the bond note different from a Zimbabwean dollar?
Sure.
Yeah. They're both currencies. But why a bond note is a bond note, not a Zimbabwean dollar note,
exactly,
is the actual instrumentation of how it actually keeps its value. Now, if it was a Zim dollar, it would actually mean that all valuation metrics would be based on the actions of the central bank.
Yeah.
So in other words, if, let's say, the Zim dollar was to be introduced at 1:1 with the US dollar, it would mean that the central bank, through monetary and fiscal mechanisms,
yeah,
would have to keep the value of a Zim dollar note 1:1. So in other words, it would probably mean that it would actually have to acquire more reserves of US dollars, or it would probably have to encourage more exports and more imports, right?
Yeah.
This is all hinged on the central bank. That is why that would
and
be
the treasury
a sovereign.
As well.
And the treasury. That's
yeah.
how it would be a sovereign Zimbabwean dollar note, right?
Yeah.
The reason why it is not is because the RBZ actually with bond notes does not have those responsibilities. What it simply does, which is also a currency, but with different instrumentation, is you peg this note to the US dollar through a loan facility which guarantees that. Hence, the difference between this and the bond and the Zimbabwean dollar of 2007 is that the RBZ actually had to keep the value of the Zim dollar at a certain exchange rate. This RBZ today doesn't have to. It just has a loan facility which it actually has to then pay back later.
So now I completely understand that. Bond notes value are pegged on this Afrimex bank
yep.
loan or to a maximum of 200 million.
Yes.
So they can't lose value as long as that Afrimex bank
exactly.
facility is available. Whereas when the monetary policy and fiscal policy is being made by your central bank and your treasury, the market can react based on how good or bad those policies are. Has anyone seen the terms of this loan or this facility from Afrimex Bank so that they can make an informed decision whether this policy or this monetary or this facility is stable and strong enough to maintain the value of the currency at 1:1 to the US?
Now, that is actually the contentious point where bond notes, and I think that's where the discussion should lie. Let's get over the fact that it is not a Zim dollar. But if you're saying it's not a Zim dollar, give us more clarity in the actual mechanisms of the loan facility. Now, the RBZ hasn't been transparent, as well as the Afrikaner Bank, been transparent that, okay, how is this loan facility actually being facilitated? What are the interest rates on that loan? What are the concrete details? Is there a documentation of agreement? Now, that is where, and I think to a certain extent, even certain people who actually buy into the idea of a bond note actually still have that
uncertainty. But we don't know what are we going to have to give for this loan? How are we going to pay it back? Where is the money coming
from?
That
is something that
we just mortgaged our future on this gamble so Mangudya can sign a pretty piece of paper and allow these guys to finance the election efforts in 2018.
Piece of paper.
The bond note. It's not actually pretty, but look, I have to find something positive in it.
So I think in terms of bond notes, for me, that's where I kind of get off the bus. Like, be transparent in the facility, because if the facility is there, and if you can actually trace the facility, then there's no problem. But you're actually exacerbating the suspicion by not actually being transparent that what is the facility? Where's the facility?
What I want to know is this issue of this import incentive, because I'm
export
using
incentive.
Export incentive. Export incentive. My bad. I'm using bond notes. I don't export unless it's data or unless it's tweets to the United States. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't export anything. And I'm sure millions of other Zimbabweans don't export anything, but they have been given this export incentive to use. How does that work? What is this export incentive? How is it beneficial to me, Chris Charamba, who exports tweets to the United States?
If your tweets had value, so let's say if you sold your...
Oh, Chris, I think your tweets had value. Don't listen to this guy.
I mean, like, if they had a monetary value. If you were selling your tweets, Chris, at $5 a pop, and let's say over the month of December, you tweeted 100 times. So let's say you've exported $500 worth. You would then get your foreign fans or followers to actually pay you. That money, you take to a bank. You deposit that money. You get a 5% incentive. So what's 5% of $500?
$25.
So you get $25 from the RBZ that actually with your documentation that yes, these are exports deposited into your account.
So you now have $525.
Yes.
Not $500 and 25 bonds.
Nope.
But where does the $25 come from?
From the RBZ?
From the 200 million.
From the 200 million AfriXim loan?
No, that's not restricted to the AfriXim. The notes in circulation are what that facility is for.
Okay.
The money that's being given as an incentive is actually RBZ or Treasury money.
But does
didn't know. And that really raises a lot more questions. Where are they finding the money if they can't pay workers? Money? If they can't even pay workers on a month-to-month basis and they're barely meeting any of their balance or international loan requirements, where are they going to find millions of dollars to pay?
For the 5%?
Yeah.
Or the 3% when...
If I'm a gold producer and I export $200 million worth of gold this year, where are they going to find that? Because that's a significant amount.
I'll give you an example. So when you export or import, you have value-added tax. The more you actually... export, the more receipts you're actually giving government. So by you actually selling your tweets, you're actually increasing the fiscus. That's where they're getting the money.
Okay.
So you basically put it this way. I would also then look at it as you're getting a share of what you actually deserve.
So why didn't they just cut value-added tax or cut taxes to the businesses and then increase and decrease the cost of doing business in Zimbabwe, which would have a long-term benefit. So you decrease tariffs, you make it less expensive for the same gold manufacturer or the same Twitter follower, make data cheaper so he can tweet more as opposed to giving him money after.
My main criticism of bond notes is it's an instrumentation which you're putting in place, right? Yet it is probably the most difficult to execute when there are other issues that you can actually resolve before relying on a bond.
No, that's exactly
this
right.
This is, I think, what a lot of people, and a lot of people that I've spoken to, other economists, when I called them, were saying was that this bond note situation seems like it's a gamble, and a very big gamble.
Huge gamble, by the way.
A very big gamble when there were other things that could have been reverted
more
to.
More basic.
And then gives suspicion to the intention. Because, like, let's say if you're really serious about fixing your current account or capital account balance, which is your exports minus imports, make business easier here.
Yeah.
Make processes swift. Kill corruption. Do all the good things that enable your people to actually export any other day. But don't offer them $25 for your tweets when in any other day they can't actually get
money. This is the thing, is that millions of Zimbabweans can't export. And if we look at the list of the people that actually do export, you're likely to find that they have connections within the government, or they are government officials, or they're, you know, these kind of businesses. So the money is kind of circulating in the same circles, when really the people who should be benefiting in terms of once you increase exports and businesses grow, I believe are your SMEs, in that you have to get new businesses going. You have to get people actively employed paying taxes, that kind of thing. Your formal economy has to grow, which I don't see how. I have a very limited understanding on this bond notes issue, but I don't see how that's going to benefit the formal economy in terms of growing it in size.
And if I was to open a little electronics shop here as an SME trying to sell my cell phones, most of the people eventually, and this is what I foresee happening, and I don't know if it's going to be correct or not, at least a certain percentage of my receipts are going to be in bond notes. Now, right now, factually speaking, making a payment outside of the country is almost impossible. It's very difficult. You have to get RBZ approval. Are bond notes going to make that easier? I don't think so. So what have they actually solved if you can't, if they're saying, oh, we're trying to stop externalization of US dollars, fine, you can use the bond notes here. But now that the bond notes are here, the assumption is that they've freed up some US dollars so that now if I want to buy, you know, my small house from England, the flowers, I can swipe my card without getting Manguja's permission.
Here's the limitation with many.
You have a small house in England?
The limitation with many government policies is we interpret them halfway. So, for instance, it's the same thing with this whole special economic zones thingy. But that's another. Take this idea of an export incentive, right? Basically, what you guys are saying indirectly is a question we should be asked to government. Import incentives aren't supposed to be a reward structure. They're actually supposed to be an enabling structure. By you saying, we'll pay Chris $25 for 500 tweets, that is a reward.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not making the business environment easier for business to actually export.
Yeah.
No.
That is, so in terms of the limitations of it being an export incentive, it's an export reward, not an incentive.
So they're bribing us to accept their new currency.
I can't even call it a bribe because at the end of the day, I'm not an exporter.
Yeah.
And the other incentive, I think, is when you get remittances.
Yeah.
So when your small house in England sends you money
back home,
you get you get 3%, which at the end of the day, I mean, look, I'm not going to be. I think maybe we should put it out. Let's see if it actually works. So all those people listening to our podcast in the UK, in Australia, in the US, please send us money. We want to see if this
for 3% works.
What is your account, guys? Your politics and beyond.
Rather, I will send you money, and then you can send it back to me, and I'll have 3% extra when it gets here.
That's actually true.
If I can get US dollars out of this country, if I, for example, if I were to cross to Messina with $100 US in my pocket, go to Mukuru at Messina and transfer it back to myself, when I get here, there'll be an added 3%.
But then you've got like what you call like capital restrictions, which basically like, so let's say, yeah, you can do that with $100, but you can't do that with, I think it's $10,000. You can't cross the border.
3% yeah, of 10,000 is the difference
between $300.
Get December, man.
But I mean, back to the seriousness of bond notes. One of the issues has been around this Gershom's law that bad money drives out good money. And banks right now, Standard Chartered, if you go to the bank, they'll give you, well, on Monday, they were giving you 50 US dollars in US dollars and 50 bond notes. So 50 US dollars and 50 bond notes, right? And so far, the money that I've used or I've tried to get rid of is bond notes, right? I've not touched the US dollars. And I think a lot of people are the same, is that they'd rather get rid of the bond notes because they don't want to keep them rather than keep the US dollars on them. So how do you combat this problem? I think it's going to be a major
problem.
You've
just answered Henry's first question when Henry said, why don't you just put the 200 million into the market? It's because of debt. Because what tends to happen is, like Chris said, okay, so you've got 50-50 US and bond notes, but you're impulsively going to use the bond notes first, right?
Yeah.
But if time goes, if at least, let's say, 3 months goes, and you still see that the bond note is legitimate, you still feel the comfort of actually going to buy, you get change in it, it's interchangeable, and you see, what you've done is you're now primed to accept more of it on the market. So, for instance, if they had just thrown in the 200 million today,
yeah,
and everybody did what you were saying, what it would do is it exhausts the whole facility without actually getting the facility to actually get into people.
That's why I completely agree with the psychology of doing that. But I don't see it positively. I genuinely see it as a nefarious way to make people accept something unpleasant.
I would argue then, like, from a point of view, like, okay, so let's take general sentiment, which is very a generalization.
Yeah.
On Sunday, there was great skepticism, right, towards bond notes.
Yeah.
We've had the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Would you somewhat agree that the sentiment is actually improving over the past 4 days?
Yeah, definitely.
So that's what the intention is, long, like, say, hopefully by 3 months' time. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I get that. But at the end of the day, right, is I think you're going to find people holding on to U.S. dollars, whether it's, you know, under the mattress, wherever, National Mattress Bank, NMB, and all these, you know, sorts of things, and using the bond notes more. So are people actually going to be banking their U.S. dollars? Because if I go to the bank today and I bank 100 U.S. dollars, when I take it out, it's going to come as 50 bond notes and 50 U.S. dollars.
But the reason why the RBZ is actually... So yes, there's that impulse in people. But what you do is you actually limit bond notes to the point where you can't continue living with storing your
U.S. dollars.
So okay. Basically, they've just put like, what, 12 million on the market.
Yeah.
I don't know when you'll inject the $5 notes or extent. But basically, the bond notes on the market right now are not yet enough for people to conveniently...
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Like, I still need to use Kayu's Kango kind of thing.
No. So, yeah, on that, I think the RBZ said that by December, there should be $75 million worth of bond notes in circulation. So right. I'm assuming that the $5 notes will probably come soon.
And this is, I suppose, you might not have an answer to this. What I've seen with some banks, when you want to make an external payment, you might have $10,000 in your account, money that's been RTGS'd from wherever it came from, but you want to transfer $1,000 to South Africa, and they'll say, yeah, if you bring us the US dollars tomorrow, we'll do that transfer for you. But if you want us to do that transfer from the money that's already in your account, we can't. So now, you know, when you now have more and more bond notes coming in, first of all, do you think banks are going to be able to get enough reserves in this country to replenish their nostril accounts? Secondly, if they can't do that, how am I going to transfer when I've now only got, when you know, 75 million, I suppose, I don't know how much money is actually circulating in the account, when of my 1,000 US dollars, now 35% of that is in bond notes, but I still need to transfer 35% out.
I guess the answer to that would be from you. That's when you then take bond notes in the entire context. The reason for bond notes is that the term we like to use is holistic approach. There's actually a lag between the amount of US dollars available for transactions going outwards. So the whole idea of actually having bond notes is over time, you're trying to build back US dollars. So as in terms of today, yes, you have 10,000 bucks in your account, but you can actually transact with that entire 10,000. That is the reality of today. But the mechanism is to work so that by increasing exports, you are now trying to bring back US dollars into the economy, that hopefully by January, February, that 10,000 you have, you can easily.
But my point is, there's a limited productive capacity in this country.
Which is why then the holistic approach is that don't just look at bond notes by themselves.
Yeah, no.
Look at them as an instrument, which is actually with statutory instrument 64 and
nothing else. else at this moment. I mean, command, what else is there really? It just seems like we said that it's a very difficult way to achieve, you know, increasing productive capacity, or why wouldn't, and maybe he'll pull a, Chinamasa will pull a shocker on us and genuinely significantly decrease the government wage bill on the 8th of
the
December.
The problem with
but
that
it just seems that
is yet arguing extent, which I don't think there's a right or wrong. Why I say that is because what you'll find this quarter compared to last quarter is someone will argue that we've actually had, we've reduced 2.6 billion bucks on our trade deficit.
Yeah.
So someone can then argue saying, yeah, as you can see, it's a work in progress. So if we can keep that trend, it means we've reduced 5 billion by the time we're next year.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, it's not a...
It's economics, there's, which is a social science.
There's like a lot of space. There's a margin for dispute there where somebody can then say to you, nah, it's a holistic approach. Well, we'll get to that point. So
I also think that arguing bond notes today is, I mean, it's very necessary, but at the same time, we can't actually, yeah, it's very inconclusive. We can't make a comprehensive analysis on the effect because they've only been in the economy for 4 days or so. So it's going to take some time, and hopefully, my hope is that it actually works. I think because we need something positive for our economy. I don't know if I don't believe this was the right method to go, but now that it's here, I do hope it works.
I think it's
because if it doesn't work, then it will only affect our economy,
you know,
much worse than it is today.
Here's one of my problems with we're being attacked. A lot of us are bond skeptics or people that have been vehemently against bond notes. Quite a lot on Twitter at the moment because it seems like we're anti-Zimbabwean by saying bond notes should fail, or that we're saying we somehow want the people to suffer because in our whatever north of Samora, wherever you live, you're comfortable enough that no matter what happens with the economy, you'll still be okay. Or you've got it in, whatever. But that's not really what we're saying. I'll give you an example of the implementation of this. And Manguji has gone out of his way and has done a lot more than a lot of other government ministers when they're implementing projects. But it still shows a level of disregard for the opinions of the people. It shows a lot of disregard for what people think. And I'll give you a perfect example is that, a number of times they said that they would set up an independent commission to oversee the printing or the coming of bond notes. So my understanding was that they would get captains of industries, even their own appointees, even people that are staunchly with the regime to basically rubber stamp this. But they haven't even cared enough to give us a dummy organization that would rubber stamp these bond notes. They went and released them by themselves with their own volition after saying that they're going to have an independent commission. And we've accepted them, we're using them, basically saying to the government that, look, these people will keep taking whatever we feed them no matter what, no matter how right or wrong it is.
Look, I think there is nothing wrong with being against bond notes. And I think people have their fears, and their fears are very legitimate. And the hope would be that the government takes into consideration the people's fears and that they explain certain things better. They use better terminology. They engage the people. I know one of the issues right now that Honorable Chibaya from Mkoba brought up was that
this is
in Parliament yesterday during question and answer, was that there's a parliamentary committee going around asking people questions on bond notes, whether they, you know, want bond notes or not, whether they want bond notes or not, basically. And this committee is going around after bond notes have been introduced, when it should have gone around before. So these are some of the issues that, and
you guys are called politics and beyond.
Yes,
we are.
I was speaking most of my arguments from an
economic perspective.
Point of view. Yeah. Let me delve a bit into the politics of it. To a large extent, I think where we go wrong as a nation, not as parties, pro or anti, is we've stepped away from analysis of facts. Where, for me, what really pokes me about this whole bond note thing, and why in most of my dialogues I seem to be against the people who are against bond notes, is because if you're going to be against bond notes, first accept the facts of it, of what it actually is, what it's supposed to do. It does not mean that, similarly like me, it doesn't mean that I conform with it, but I respect the facts of it, right? Now, the problem we have in Zimbabwe is you tend to find people are adamant in certain positions because they feel like it draws them to a certain side, pro or anti. So, for instance, I've been following the no to bond note, anti-bond note
demonstrations
and social media and whatnot. From my impartial seat at home, following the tweets, I would like to see you give me reasons why you're anti-bond notes. And if you strike factual reasons, I'll support that. The people who are pro-bond note, give me factual reasons, and I'll support that. The problem is, no offense, I still haven't, from the anti-bond note people, seen any factual basis that actually makes me then say, yeah, they're right. Do you get my point? It's not that I'm anti them, but I can't just support you for the sake of, because then it then seems to me that it's coming from a political conviction more than an actual factual economic, my bank account's interest.
I tried to give you a couple today, which you agreed with, for example, the transparency of, and like you even said, Mangudri has acknowledged the long and tardy and tarnished history the Reserve Bank has with his people. So he should be more aware than anyone that he's got a higher.
And I think he's given the, what's the name of the anti-non-bond? Is there a name for it, the anti-bond? So let's say he's given the anti-bond note movement
enough time.
Yes. Now the fact, also the fact that matters, there's also this thing which we should learn as a nation. And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong. I'm also learning. And we should ask ourselves as a nation, to what point does executive or incumbent powers vested in these people carry out its business without disregarding social sentiment, right? So from a governor's point of view, if he feels like putting bond notes is what's right, to a large extent, that's what he was appointed for. He knows more about monetary things than we do, right? To what extent can he then make a decision, yet the public, let's say overwhelmingly 99% of people, let's say, wouldn't want bond notes? How do you reconcile that? Do you get the point which I'm trying to ask you guys?
Yeah.
Like from, I think from a societal point of view, never mind just the politics, I think as Zimbabweans, we should start assessing our structures of governance. To what extent do we actually, hey, I voted for you as my MP, so you are going to make certain decisions. And how, to what extent should we let that go? And to what extent can I then say, yes, I elect you as MP, but you're now putting hose pipes, you're now allowing hose pipes.
Yeah.
We don't want, to what extent do you get what I'm trying to say?
I think that's a very interesting question. And it comes to social consciousness and political awareness of people when it comes to voting people into positions of office. Because technically, there are processes. So whilst the governor has responsibilities and executive powers within the space of his office, there are other processes in terms of legalizing, for example, bond notes that have to go through certain steps. The president used executive powers to put an emergency act, which is being challenged in the Constitutional Court as illegal because it doesn't conform with this new constitution that we have. And now the act is actually a bill that is being tabled in parliament. And our parliament has a majority ZANU-PF.
Yeah.
So you can guarantee that this act is going to pass.
Through.
Right? And it's a very good point in terms of what is the political awareness of the people to know that the people that we are going to vote into positions of power, and not from a perspective of voting for the president, but actually just voting for your local MP.
I'll give you guys a question.
Because your MP has powers.
Yeah.
I actually think here the problem in this specific situation is the guy who was the predecessor to the current incumbent abused his executive mandate per se, right? Yeah. Here's the question I'd ask people. If the governor had listened to us when we were saying no to bond coins, our economy would probably be more devastated today than if he hadn't put them in.
I don't agree, because you keep speaking about a holistic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
If the governor had listened to us when we had said no to bond coins, and the Treasury had implemented basic things like reducing wage bills, like curbing corruptions, things like that, if they had at that time, which is almost 2 years ago, taken steps.
When you expand an argument like that, there's no win or lose.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I'm just saying that's what you did to me when we're talking about bond notes. Because you said holistically. If we're speaking about the simple liquidity crunch, the RBZ is ultimately the what's it called? There's a certain term they use for it as bankers. But at the end of the day, he's the regulator. So we are moving to a cashless society. He said we're encouraging everyone to use cards. We're encouraging
and
everyone
we're
to use
it slowly. Yeah.
But he hasn't said to a bank that every one of your accounts must have cards and your banking fees must be at a set amount. So every swipe transaction must be to a point that it's no less than, no more than 2% of the transaction, or no more than every time you go to the ATM. Because the reason that there's such a slow adoption of cards is that it's still really expensive.
My actual criticism of the governor is sometimes I think he's too compromising, trying to appease different stakeholders. If I was in his position, before, like I said, bond notes is actually a difficult way of doing things. If you wanted to fix things, anybody who's got space in an urban or a commercially allotted, have a POS system, also move out.
And exactly, the thing is that that's been done before. There's precedent for that because the previous finance minister forced every single one to have VAT transactions. So you needed to have a point of sale that has VAT on it.
Which is why the criticism of bond notes is so it's a very difficult
way
path
to go around this. Yeah. Before whilst we're speaking about this on the issue of bond notes, is that now they're circulating.
Yeah.
But some people aren't taking them. So Miss Red tweeted earlier that her doctor is not taking bond notes. And then I asked her, does he have Swipe or EcoCash? And she says he's waiting for his POS machine to come. He's on a waiting list. Oh, okay. And he has EcoCash, but she doesn't have EcoCash and she doesn't use an Econet line.
Yeah.
Which is very valid. It's her own choice.
It's his choice not to take bond notes.
It is also. And I asked her, why isn't he taking bond notes? And she said, because he can't tell whether they're genuine or not. And there have been some discrepancies shared on social media regarding the security features and that sort of thing. So, I mean, they're 4 days into the economy, but people already have these big fears. And if people like doctors aren't taking bond notes, and you only have bond notes to go and pay, now you have to go out of your way if you don't have EcoCash to find someone with EcoCash. I know that it's a serious issue to a lot of people. And I don't know how.
Let me tell you also where our politics goes wrong.
Yeah.
In our political arguments and debates, is we've also lost the idea of justifiable patriotism. Why do I say that? There are certain actions that a citizen is not obliged to, but that a citizen is are in the best interest of a nation for a citizen to take. What we've actually done by polarizing ourselves politically is we've cleared, like we've erased that margin of patriotism. Do you get what I'm trying to say? So while assuming ideally Zimbabwe was politically, you know, yes, we would have pro or anti, you would have some sort of behavior which you would say is pro-Zimbabwe. What you'll find not often spoken about as Zim is a lot of, if I can use the word, economic sabotage, is actually not done through bad policy, but actually through other companies which you would be embarrassed to actually name out. Do you get what I'm trying to say? So a lot of currency manipulation is actually done by somewhat family-friendly banks.
But
the thing is, to talk about patriotism in that way, right, is, and I hate to personalize it, but a lot of us are being called unpatriotic for being anti-bond notes and everything like that. But the unpatriotic thing would be to think, ah, geez, this thing is shit. It's going to fail. And then sit back and say, it's more patriotic to say, you're going to fail. Don't enforce it upon us.
I completely agree. It does come to that issue where this anti-bond notes thing is happening. And people ask the question, okay, it seems as if people actually want bond notes to fail. I think I don't know if there's a line. I think it's a very fine line between people actually voicing their genuine fears and people actually waiting and saying, it's going to fail. It's going to fail. I hope it fails. And when it does fail, then come out and say, I told you it's going to fail.
Yeah.
So
it harms all of us. Though.
That's the thing.
That argument.
So
the thing is,
I'm very concerned about that argument I would not have gone the bond notes option, but they are here. How do we work best with the situation that we have? whilst we are still trying to find alternatives and alternative ways to change this situation.
I can agree with that. I can take bond notes with all prejudice. I'm going to be paying my rates. I'll be paying ZESA with bond notes. I'm not going to take them to a business I respect.
Sure.
I'll pay the government in their notes and their money. And I'm literally, that's my form of acceptance of bond notes. I don't necessarily want them to fail because while I might be okay, but the thing is, the level of like you were saying, back to people wanting them to fail. That's not really the case. And in fact, if we actually go back to the root causes of it, externalization of money is not really the government. It's private sector. These same banks that are now crying foul and complaining about their nostril accounts being looted. Are because of, you know, we're doing it themselves. CBZ being the worst offender, who John Mangujo was in charge of for the last how many years? So he's solving his own problems that he created at his own bank, even to this day. And, you know, my understanding of bond notes or what a bond is, sort of leads me to see the similarities in, you know, the first 3 years since 2013 when, they were flooding the markets with treasury bills, to the point that and I'm sure there's a more, John Robertson, an economist, actually alluded to the fact that a big reason you might have this is a lot of the private sector money that was left in Zim was being sucked up by treasury bills, and now the market is saturated with them.
Yep.
To the point that they had to find some other more creative way. So perhaps we might say this is a very difficult way for them to, but they probably had no choice because behind the scenes, they've done something so terrible because one wonders how they've been paying salaries all this time when they've had no money.
What you've actually just said is also another cusp of the problem. The fact of the matter is this. Government has to adjust to respect its economic role as an entity. Policy, economic agents, even if they're private, will not work out until government starts to respect the fact that public perception of credibility matters.
Yeah.
Just because you are the regulatory institution or because you are the incumbent. And like I said, it goes back to that, to what extent does the executive have to actually execute a mandate on behalf of the people? You've got to conduct your business based largely on credibility. Now, the example you gave of Red's doctor, what he's lacking is credibility. Now, yes, someone like me can say, man, act the patriotic way. But then you can't push him because at the end of the day, there's got to be credibility in patriotism. So one thing, and I do acknowledge that Mangujo actually acknowledges, is government has a ways to go in actually getting its credibility back for policy, for social trust, of which why I'd asked for a US dollar early on when I was trying to explain bond notes, and when you were saying what is a currency. The fact of the matter is, currency is just a medium of exchange, which people use on faith that there's an instrument
behind
it. Yeah. Now, if you're going to take the faith and trust aspect, most of the criticism for the Zimbabwean bond notes is exactly that. While you may have all these factual instrumentations I've explained to you, on top of all of that, there's got to be faith in
the currency.
Yeah. Unfortunately, plenty of behavior doesn't give that.
I mean, on the issue of faith, I asked the question on my Facebook and Twitter the other day, what's the difference between a bond note and a dirty US dollar? Because you can't take a dirty US dollar outside the country and use it, say, to South Africa, Zambia. Mm-hmm. You can take it to the Fed Reserve in the United States, but, you know, very few people are going there. And, you know, Pastor Ivan might be one of the lucky
Shots fired.
But generally, you know, very few people are going there. So what's the difference? Because I can't use it in South Africa. And someone said to me that the difference is that they have faith that the dirty US dollar, as dirty as it is, will hold its value. There's no faith that the bond note tomorrow will still be one-to-one with the US dollar. And I think we've discussed as much as we can.
We might even come back in 3 months when...
Yeah, when
I think we should look at it in 3 months.
The jury is out for... Like, but then the nice thing about these policies is it takes, they say it takes a quarter to actually have enough metrics to see whether a policy or a instrument or whatever actually works. So it takes time.
Let's see if it actually works. What is the measure of success for a bond note? What actually is the measure of success?
When I get paid for my tweets.
For me, what it aims, or at least what we must focus for it to do, is, ironically, never mind the liquidity issue.
Yeah.
What it should actually do is, by June next year, what you must have is a situation where your import bill is shrunk and your export bill is... That is for me, even though it's a liquidity issue.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. Because that's the same thing I was saying, that they should fix before they start going to bond notes. But my point is, will it have worked if we still can't send money overseas freely, or if it's still very difficult for us to pay bills? For example, if you've got a child at university, even in South Africa, it's not going to be easy. And liquidity might be fine, but, you know...
You've opened a segue for another discussion, which is important, though, to understand where bond notes came from. The fact of the matter is, guys, we're using the most envied currency and the strongest currency in the world right now. So, yes, to a large extent, there's been incompetence. But even generally, globally, by using the US dollar, we are already vulnerable to a lot of challenges that have put us in this situation. So I'm just saying that so that I don't think a lot of Zimbabweans agree with that. This liquidity crisis going on in Zim is also going on in Zambia. It's just that they've got their own currency
to print bearer checks.
US dollar.
So I think maybe if we should start trying to wrap it up now. But
bring back a Zim dollar.
If you guys, the listeners.
I'm serious. In 2-3 years.
On that note, if you guys want to hear Chris speak about bringing back the US dollar, let us know and we'll have him back even as early as next week. We can chuck a special episode for you guys in there as we wind down for Christmas. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening. I hope you were informed. I was lucky enough not to have any names to say today.
Thank you very much for listening. Please do follow our page on Facebook, Beyond Poly, Politics and Beyond on Facebook. Follow our Twitter handle, Beyond Poly ZW. Tweet us. Hit us up on Facebook. Listen to our SoundCloud. Let us know what you think.
You're on social media, yeah, Chris?
Yes, at Chris Chenga on Twitter.
Yeah.
And Chris Chenga on Facebook.
So, yeah, do follow
no
Chris Chenga.
Yeah, no.
We want to see what you do on your weekends.
Guys, I'm actually, you know what? Unfortunately, I have to say, I'm actually upset we didn't name drop in terms of politics. I really want to go into like.
You can come back. Drop a name. Thanks. I'm at Henry Beattie on Twitter, and you don't need my Facebook.
Yeah.
cheers. Yeah. Capital 263.